Getting engaged is a moment worth cherishing. A one-of-a-kind ring that you design at Blue Nile can help your love sparkle. Just choose your diamond and setting. When you've found the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Finding the right engagement ring can be nerve-wracking. At Blue Nile, you'll have the expert guidance needed and a diamond guarantee that ensures you're getting the highest quality at the best price. Cherish all of life's moments and save up to 30% at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hyperice, the leader in advanced warm-up and recovery technology. They have tons of innovative products, like Venom-heated wearables to help soothe sore back muscles, Normatec compression boots to speed up recovery and increase circulation, and Hypervolt massage guns to improve mobility. Loved by athletes like Naomi Osaka and Erling Haaland. Try them yourself. Get 10% off your order with the code MOVE at HyperRice.com.
Introducing Royal Caribbean's newest ship, Icon of the Seas, the ultimate family vacation. The ultimate six slides, eight neighborhoods, zero compromise vacation. The ultimate never done that, can't wait to do it vacation. The ultimate chillin' by a different pool every day of the week vacation. This is the Icon of Vacations. Icon of the Seas. Arriving in 2024. Book today. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry Bahamas.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Good afternoon and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Well, at the end of the season for the Raiders, we had to sit back and we had to examine. The team has so many holes and everywhere. There's not one spot on this team that they couldn't either upgrade or provide depth. To discuss all of it, one of my favorite voices, one of the smartest football minds out there, he is the managing editor of Last Word on College Football. Also a board director of the Football Writers Association of America. My guy, Tony Siracusa. Good afternoon, T.
Hey, T. Biggs. How are you, sir?
It's an honor, man,
to be on the show.
Hey, you know the door will always, always, always be open. Now, you know how it is. Now, before we jump into the particular questions, is there your overall feeling about the quarterback class of 2022?
Yeah, you know, look, I think that one of the things that people who are going to watch the draft and watch the combine and pro days and the individual workouts need to realize is that in this particular class, you got to get used to the idea there is not an obvious wealth of quarterback talents at the top. There's no Trevor Lawrence in here. There's no Baker Mayfield. There's no quarterback who's going to go number one overall in the draft. The elite level of talent in this draft belongs on the lines on both sides. You got guys like Evan Neal or Aiden Hutchinson, Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon. What there is at the quarterback position in this draft is that there's more depth. There are a lot more guys that are good. They're going to get drafted, and there's just a lot more of them. But there's not that elite guy at the top.
No. Who is, in your opinion, the best quarterback in this draft, and why?
You know, I think one of the things we go through, and you know, you had mentioned, you know, the Football Writers Association, and I say this not to be braggadocious, but to talk about, like, kind of what my process is or our process, is that I get a vote for the Football Writers Association All-American team. And so we've seen all of these guys. And part of what happens is there's a general vote with the 300 members, and that kind of gives us our short list because I'm on the panel, the finalist panel, which is 12 of us across the country. And we spend a lot of Sundays in mid-November all the way through into early December on conference calls, 2-3 hours long, going over position by position, player by player. And I say that to point out that one of the things we don't do in our analysis is say, hey, here's a guy with really good stats. He's the guy. He's the quarterback. He's the best quarterback. We actually break it down into game by game. How did this guy do in the biggest games? Was he consistent all year, or was he racking up his stats against lesser opponents? You know, maybe some FCS teams or some smaller schools, or was he consistent all the way through? How did he play in the biggest games when the lights were the brightest? That's a huge part of where my analysis comes from for the positions for the draft. Having said that, I do think that Kenny Pickett, the quarterback from Pitt, is the best quarterback in the draft. And the reason is because NFL scouts are already going to know what they're getting with him. He's developed. He's 23 years old. He's got the size. He's 6'3", 220. He's had 51 career starts in college. And, you know, he had a great senior year. I talk about we don't just look at the stats, but when a guy throws for more than 4,000 yards, you know, with a 67% completion rate, that's going to jump out at you. But the thing is, he had his some of his biggest games when the division race was on the line for Pitt. He had big games against Duke, against UNC, against Clemson, played very well in the ACC championship game against Wake Forest, threw for 260 yards. So he's got a lot of maturity to him already. He doesn't have that blazing arm strength. He's not, you know, it's funny. You and I have talked about this offline before. There are buzzwords that get thrown around draft time, and they drive me nuts. You know, he's got a cannon for an arm. Maybe. maybe not. He's got a good arm. I'd give it a B+. He does not have, you know, something where you're going to look at the ball and go, man, he fired that thing. But he's incredibly accurate to all three levels of the field, right? He's got a great percentage in the short passes, the intermediate game, and he can go downfield with really good accuracy. So he's very well versed in diagnosing and attacking the different coverages. And this is, I think this is big for certain NFL teams. He spent a lot of time playing under center. Pitt mixes up their offense quite a bit between the shotgun and putting Pickett under center. And I think that's of great value to the NFL, who, while they have transitioned over the years to a little bit more of a wide open offense and putting the quarterback in the shotgun, there's still a lot of teams that like the quarterback under center just as much. And he can do both.
Now, when I look at Pickett, you said he does have a decent, a good arm. I like his footwork. I like his feet. And you mentioned somebody who he's matured. He's 23. This is a guy came out, didn't really have many offers. But yet he made something of himself. Would that speak to the ability to put the work in and not solely rely on athletic ability and talent?
Yeah, you know, it says a lot about his work ethic. And I know that teams like to put a lot of focus on how a guy interviews. And, I know we're familiar with how the interview process at the combine goes. I think you get like 3 minutes or 4 minutes with each player. And it's kind of, you know, anachronistic to what really works well. But when the scouts talk to him and they meet with him, you know, he interviews really well. He's very thoughtful in his answers because he has put in the work. And to your point, by putting in that work, I think that ties in with what we were talking about earlier, that he does a great job of diagnosing and attacking the coverages because he's done the film work. He's done the on-field work. So he gets it. If Kenny Pickett is your guy, if you're an NFL GM and Kenny Pickett is your guy, there's not a lot of development questions that go with him. Like, can we get him to do this? Can we get him to do that? He is as close to a finished product as there is among this current class of quarterbacks. I mean, look, the guy owns all the, and statistically it's all there. I mean, He has beaten all of Dan Marino's school records at Pitt. So while I say we don't harp on the stats, the performance on the field is obviously there. He's Pitt's career leader in passing yards and touchdown passes and all those things. He's shoved Dan Marino aside in the record books at Pitt, and there's something to be said for that.
That is impressive. You have quarterbacks like Dan Marino, Alex Van Pelt, who has walk through Pitt and just to have Kenny Pickett to the top of the list. Now, if we transfer, make the transition to best athlete at quarterback, who do you say possesses the highest athletic palette as far as skill set and raw ability?
Okay, now here's an interesting thing. Skills, I'm going to separate, if I can, skill set and raw ability. Because I think that there's a little bit of a difference in looking at them, because somebody like Pickett has the NFL skill set. In terms of raw ability and athleticism, I think it's Malik Willis at Liberty. Now, he's got a lot of work to do to play at the next level, but he's got a high ceiling. In other words, to me, there's a lot of room still for him to grow. This is a guy who it took him a while to kind of find his world. I mean, he had pledged to Virginia Tech, but they wanted him as an athlete. They were going to make him a defensive back. And then he decided to go to Auburn, winds up sitting behind Jarrett Stidham for two full years. You know, he's the backup. I think he got in barely about a dozen passes over those 2 years while he was at Auburn. And then Auburn goes and recruits Bo Nix, who, you know, they recruited right over Malik Willis. So he winds up transferring to Liberty. And Hugh Freeze was the best thing that happened to Malik Willis, because Hugh Freeze went to Liberty needing something to build a program around. I mean, let's face it, Liberty football was non-existent for all intents and purposes. And Hugh Freeze is a big name coach who gets the call after his, you know, descent at Ole Miss for various reasons. And so he really booked his offense on Malik Willis and his athletic ability. This is going to sound kind of strange. He's got a thick build. He's 6'1", but he's 215 pounds at 6'1". So he's not some lanky guy who's got to bulk up. He's got the physical build already, and he's got that powerful arm. I'm not going to call it a cannon because we're not going to use those silly phrases, but he does have a strong arm. What needs to be refined in him is his footwork, because he tends to get happy feet in the pocket sometimes. And he needs to learn that what the mental clock is in terms of when he's got to release the ball, when he's got to take off. So that comes down to kind of a down to down decision making ability that he can still be taught. He can learn it. You know, there's nothing that says that he doesn't have that. He's only played really 2 years as a quarterback in college. And, you know, the NFL scouts are going to take into consideration, of course, that he didn't exactly play with pro-level talent around him. So the things he accomplished were really exceptional, considering the fact that he was it. He really was the foundation of the offense. And, he makes good decisions when he is throwing. I mean, he had 20 touchdown passes, only had 6 interceptions last season. But it's more about going through the progressions and not being so quick to leave the pocket. Those things I truly believe can be taught. They can be taught in the film room. They can be taught in scrimmages. He's got the physical ability to play. So he did well last year. He did really well. He threw for almost 3,000 yards.
Now, with Willis, I like his measurables, the ability, like you said, the solid build, the athletic, the impatience, where he'll force it deep. If it's not there, he'll try to force it in between a couple of guys. He won't take the check down when the check down is a smart play. He likes to go all or nothing, which you can kind of get away with that in Lynchburg, Virginia, but I don't really see that happening on a Sunday afternoon. And if he hones that and like you mentioned, be able to calmly, rationally chart through some progressions and kind of see the field in thirds, he's going to be a talent. Now, who would you say has the biggest upside of this quarterback class?
You know, people are gonna think I've probably lost my mind here, because I'm going way, way, way off the charts. One of the guys I like who still has a huge upside is Carson Strong out of Nevada. And I know a lot of people are going to be sitting or listening to this going, who? Because he's not one of the, he's not Howell. He's not, you know, Willis. He's not Pickett. You know, he's, but he's really, really good. And he's got, he's a very unfinished product. And the thing I like about him is he's an athletic quarterback. And I say that I like guys who played multiple sports in high school. To me, that tells you something about their athleticism, and they're more than just, you know, a guy who went to 7-on-7 camps in his spare time. And he was all CIF in California in basketball in high school. When he decided to focus on football, he wound up transferring to Concord De La Salle, which of course is one of the great high school football programs in the country. He got overlooked quite a bit because he had to have knee surgery his senior year in high school. And Nevada was one of the few teams that stuck with him. But man, he's strong. He's got a real pocket presence. I mean, he's 6'4". He's 215 pounds. So in a real program, in a real training program, you can easily see him putting on another 5-6 pounds of muscle. But he is a true pocket passer. He'll go downfield with great accuracy. He's got different ball speeds, which I really like, because you'll see some quarterbacks who, you know, frankly, they've got one speed on their passes. And when you're trying to throw to a running back out of the backfield, you know, that doesn't work. He's got touch. He's got heat for the intermediate passes. He's got the arm to go downfield. So I really like that about him. He was allowed to basically change plays on his own in the Nevada offense. You know, you see teams that do what the coaches call check with me, right? And they'll go out with a play, the coach will see the defense, and then you see the entire team looking over at the sidelines because they're changing the play. He had the autonomy to do that himself at Nevada, and I think that makes a big difference because it shows that he's got a pre-snap ability to look at what's in front of him that some of these other guys have not yet learned. They'll learn in 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is. He's not the new age sprint out quarterback. I mean, he's not fleet of foot, and he's going to need to work on that. I think he completed about, you know, he had a completion rate of about 50% throwing outside of the pocket. And so there's work to be done there. But to me, it's work that can be done. It can be taught. He's got the basics. He's got all of the fundamentals that you need in a good quarterback. He's got the size. He's got the arm strength. He's got the motion. He certainly has the knowledge of being able to read a defense. He needs to work on augmenting those things. And I think he's got a huge upside. Now, look, none of these guys are the number one pick, no matter what. I don't even think any of them are a top 10 pick. You know, Carson Strong is going to be available in the third round. But I like what he's going to produce. I like what his potential is to produce in the NFL.
For me, when I look at Carson Strong, I look at how smooth he is with the footwork inside the pocket, the ability mm-hmm. to get into his drops quickly. It's mm-hmm. it's smooth. It's accurate. It's not like there's no wasted back step. And I would go biggest upside, a guy that possibly might not be drafted or will be drafted super late, Akil Glass out of Alabama A&M.
Yes.
I like this kid for a couple of reasons. First, there's a confidence and an accuracy. I've seen, I'd say, about a dozen games, and he has a preference where down the sideline, he will fit that ball in. He does not care if the sideline is there or if the defender's there. He will try to get the ball there, and usually he will drop it in the bucket. And I like the fact that he's a big kid, 6'5"-ish, but he is mobile. He's not going to race 45, 50 yards, but he's going to get that 10, 15 if there's nothing there. And
right,
like we said, he's a developmental quarterback. He needs to sit behind a veteran and get it right, because I think that his upside is there. It is something I see. It has a potential. Now, with upside comes risk. Who do you think is the biggest risk at quarterback?
I'm gonna go back to Malik Willis. because, you know, the potential is there. He's got the physical tools, but he's got a lot still to learn. And, again, having really only competed for the last 2 years and against smaller programs, he is a risk. And, again, you know, I think you look at the risk being relative. It depends where you draft him. You know, I mean, if you're picking him in, you know, look, all of this is based on, we have no idea what trades are going to come up and who's going to move up and who's going to move down and who's going to trade away draft picks to get an established player. You know, we kind of are hypothesizing with some of that. But I think, you know, if you get Willis in the fourth or fifth round, it's lower risk. If you're trying to get him in the third round because you like his athleticism, there's a little bit more of a risk there. It depends on who's picking him, who he has the ability to sit behind, because very few of these guys are ready to start next year, depending upon, of course, who takes him. Like you said, I like Glass, but there's a little bit of a risk there as well. One of the things I like about Glass, though, is the progression from 1 year to the next. I mean, his completion percentage went up like six and a half points from two seasons ago to last season. You know, he nearly tripled his yardage. So I like him, but again, like you said, he needs to sit behind somebody. For that matter, so does Willis. For that matter, so does Strong. You know, for that matter, so do a lot of these guys, because it isn't the clear elite class. It's just a deeper class of really good quarterbacks.
Now, for me, I would say a risk would be, believe it or not, Sam Howell. I watched every snap of Sam Howell's entire North Carolina career. Mm-hmm. And good Sam, there are two Sam Howells. There's good Sam and there's bad Sam. Good Sam, mm-hmm. fluid passer, drops back, sees the field, good arm, good touch on the vertical passes. Let's talk about bad Sam for a second. Bad mm-hmm. Sam, under a rush, will bird dog a wide receiver, will try to jam it in, will throw it late when he thinks that he can get enough spin on it to get it by the defender who's about to jump the route. Bad Sam stopped a whole lot of drives. And
right.
when he's under fire, I see things that are problematic, where all his composure, it dissipates in a minute. He needs to kind of slow his approach. The talent is there. I think that Sam Howell is what people hope Baker Mayfield would be. Similar builds.
Yeah, I get that. I talk to Phil Longo probably about once every 2 to 3 weeks, the offensive coordinator in North Carolina. And, of course, Phil, you know, pumps up Sam like crazy, you know, talks about how great he is. I think one of the things that is an unknown about Howell is, like you said, he tends to force things. He didn't do that as much last year. And I think part of the reason is because of the amount of talent he had around him last year. I mean, he had guys like Javonte Williams, and he had Daz Newsome. And so he wasn't feeling as much of the pressure to get it done himself. You know, he simply had to be efficient. He had to be good. He didn't have to be great in order for them to win, because he's very much of, I would call it an in-rhythm passer. You know, he gets that rhythm, and he gets going. But as you said, a couple of mistakes, and all of a sudden that rhythm is, you know, kind of off the rails, right? And so he's got the decision-making ability, but it didn't show through nearly as much as in his senior year or in last year as it did the year before. You know, we're talking about quarterbacks who have made a jump from and shown progression. And Howell, I don't see that he made the progression. And I tend to think that has something to do with the lack of confidence in the talent around him versus what he had the year before.
I see that. I hope that at the next level, like I said, he needs maybe a little time to kind of sit, kind of get mm-hmm. a feel for the speed of the game. Because one thing I did notice is that when teams would send an extra rusher,
mm-hmm.
he'd pick it up late, and he would pick it up with the rusher in his face. And the ball is out, but he took a couple unnecessary shots that get the ball out, and it just a couple of teams would use a delayed blitz issues. He would just freeze. And he could see the rusher bearing down, but I'm not sure if there's like a late synapse firing, but he took unnecessary damage. Now, when we come back from break, I want to talk about three quarterbacks in particular, but that's after break. You're listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Does Monday at the office feel like a storm? Not with Microsoft Copilot. That feeling when Copilot gets everyone up to speed instantly? It's sunny again. When Copilot simplifies complex data so your teams can act, that sun's shining on a beach. And when Copilot uncovers hidden insights, you're on that beach with your people and you find buried treasure. That's Microsoft Copilot. Learn more at Microsoft.com/AI for all.
We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Vick, Tony Saracusa of Last Word on College Football. Tony, now, there are three quarterbacks I kind of want to discuss because they have captivated a lot of folks. Now, we talked about Kenny Pickett earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he is only a first-rounder because of lack of elite quarterback talent in this draft? Or has he actually solidified his spot as a first-rounder?
I think he solidified his spot as a first-rounder. I think it's too much of a risk to take him in the top 10. I think middle to late teens, you know, 14, 15, 16, somewhere around there. Going back to the thought of that, you know, you know what you're getting if you're an NFL GM, if you're a scout. There's not a lot of developmental questions about him or developing his game further. That he's got what you need now is, again, depending upon the team, depending upon the offense, is he ready to go in and start 17 NFL games? Probably not. He probably needs some work. But I think he's a legitimate first round pick. I don't think he's a first round pick by default.
Now, if we switch into Matt Corral, quarterback from Ole Miss,
mm-hmm.
who was last seen being carted off, do you think, not just physically, but his game, is he ready to start week one?
No. Oh, goodness, no. I think he's a good quarterback. I think that he thrived in a Lane Kiffin up-tempo style system. I mean, you know, the 20 touchdowns and only 5 interceptions, you know, show what he was capable of. You know, he's got 11,000 career yards. You know, before he even went to college. So he's had a lot of talent for a long time. And I say that because, you know, look, he was an elite high school player, and so much so that he wound up committing to USC and Florida, you know, before he wound up signing with Ole Miss. He thrived under Lane Kiffin's offense. That doesn't necessarily translate to the next level and being ready at the next level. Now, you know, you talked about the injury, and people use that as the perfect scenario for, see, this is why the elite players sit out the bowl games. I disagree. I think it's why elite players get the choice. And he took that choice to play and be with his teammates, and he knew what could happen out there. Fortunately, the injury doesn't look serious. He's supposed to be, you know, they did x-rays and, you know, he's been going through physical therapy. There was no surgery needed. So he should be ready for all of the NFL work that is, you know, coming up ahead. the one thing that I do like about him is that you can design runs for him. It's not like running because the pocket collapsed, running because he's out of options or out of time. He's got active feet in the pocket without being happy feet. And by that, I mean he's nimble. He's not dancing around back there, but he's nimble, and you can design run plays for him. So I think that that is useful. But is he ready to start week one? No, absolutely not. Look, he only threw 5 interceptions in his 13 games. He's got the stats. He's got the ability. He's had the ability for a while. But I think that there's still the part of his game that needs to develop to a professional level. Again, Lane Kiffin's offense is not an NFL offense. And that's not to knock Lane or what he does to his quarterbacks. He's very good with his quarterbacks and has been for a while. But there's going to need to be some transition time.
Now, somebody like a Desmond Ridder, do you think he'll evolve into a complete quarterback? He has the measurables. He has what you want from a quarterback. But there are times when, for me, the touch is not there, where he could lead a receiver away from coverage to a big play.
Yeah, I think, it's interesting. We talked about quarterbacks who don't have the change of pace on their balls depending upon where the throw is going. He is one of those guys. I mean, he can throw, he can put it downfield and, 30, 40 yards and put it on a dime. And then, the next play is to the quarterback out of the backfield and he's ripping it over the guy's head. So he needs to learn touch. As you say, he's got the measurables. I mean, he's good size, 6'4". He's about 215, 220. Had a great career at Cincinnati, just a tremendous career. From a mechanic standpoint, he's really good. You look at him sitting back in the pocket, even look at him rolling out, throwing on the run. He's really good from a technique standpoint, but there are the really delicate points that he still needs to learn, which is touch, which is, looking at the intermediate field and what you need versus chucking it downfield. So yeah, there is some inconsistency in his passing game. Can it be fixed? I would tend to think so. That's what NFL coaches get paid to do. So I think he's a really good quarterback. I think he is probably a mid to late first rounder.
Now, if somebody also, we talked about Sam Howell. Do you think that the comparisons to former Tar Heel and first round pick Mitchell Trubisky are accurate and warranted?
A little bit. I think they're overdone a little bit. Also, I think that, Trubisky was in college and still clearly in the pros, tends to get off his rhythm a little too easily. He tends to get knocked off his pace a little too easily. And I think that that is the one comparison with Howell to Trubisky that is fair. I actually think long term, Howell's a better quarterback than Trubisky has been or will be, down the road in the NFL. I think Howell's got a better arm, and that when he is in rhythm, he's a better quarterback than Trubisky is when Trubisky's in rhythm. So when you compare those two side by side in rhythm, I think that Howell is a better quarterback. The knock on him is, like Trubisky, he gets knocked out of that rhythm a little too easily.
Now, when we come back from break, I'm going to talk about the Raiders specifically, because they do have a quarterback entering year 9, but they still have kind of quarterback questions, but that's after we return. You're listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Pepsi Wild Cherry. Pepsi Wild Cherry is bursting with delicious cherry flavor and a sweet, crisp taste that gives you more to go wild for.
Getting wild may look different these days, but whether it's opting for a solo Friday binge watch or a big night out, everyone can indulge in their wild side with Pepsi Wild Cherry, also available in Zero Sugar. So grab a Pepsi Wild Cherry and get wild.
We are back with the Full Press Radio Podcast. Terrence Big, Tony Siracusa of Last Word on College Football. Tony, when we turn towards the Las Vegas Raiders, you got to look at their quarterback. I know that Derek Carr puts up fantastic numbers, the completion percentage there, we get all that. After eight seasons, should he still be the quarterback of this team?
I think almost by default, he has to be. And because there isn't another quarterback in this draft who is going to come in and take over from day one. And also because I think you got to look, I mean, the Raiders draft, what, 22nd in the first round, right? And they need a lot besides the quarterback. I mean, let's be frank. I mean, they need help on the offensive line. They probably need another tackle. They need help at receiver. They need help at cornerback. So do you take a quarterback at number 22, knowing that you're not going to get Kenny Pickett, who is the most NFL ready out of this group? You're going to have to develop whomever you get, at least for one season, if not longer, but at least for one season. And so you kind of got to stick with Carr because you almost need him. And I know no starting quarterback in the NFL wants to hear this, but you almost need him to tutor the next guy, whoever it's going to be, because there's no one that the Raiders are going to get with the 22nd pick that's going to be ready to step in and be the starter from week one and have success. You're going to have to ride them through some tough spots if you put them in and start them right away. And then again, like I said, you got to ask the question that should the Raiders even be taking a quarterback at number 22? I mean, look, you know, can they get Desmond Ridder at number 22? Yeah, probably. Can they get somebody else later on? Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, they can probably get the kid from Nevada, Carson Strong, probably even in the third round, you know, if they've got a third round pick. And you've got a kid you can develop for the next couple of years before he's ready. So I think you're kind of stuck with Carr right now.
Now, on the heels of that, you said he by default, do you think, just looking at the totality of his work, has he earned that $30 to $35 million extension for a couple of years? Or should the Raiders, you know what, play out your deal and we'll talk after?
Yeah, I think it's choice B. I think the Raiders gotta say, you know, look, you gotta play deeper into your contract, play closer to the end of your deal, and then we'll see what's what. And I know that, you know, any NFL agent is gonna protect their clients and say, no, you got to talk to him now because if you're going to let him play out his contract or go into the last year of his contract, we're not going to be real happy with the conversations and may look at our options elsewhere and, you know, not be inclined to sign and what have you. And so, you know, look, it's always a cat and mouse game with the agents, the player, and the team itself, but I can't see why the Raiders would commit that kind of money to him for another couple of years at this point.
Now, last question. The Raiders haven't spent draft capital on a quarterback since Connor Cook, and that kind of blew up in their faces. What quarterback, right, outside of Carr, would you want to sit behind Carr for 2 years before being properly up to speed and ready to go?
Honestly, I would take a look at a Desmond Ridder. And again, looking at people that they can logically get because they're not going to get Pickett. He won't be available at 22, you know, and likely Corral won't be either. So I would look at a Desmond Ridder because he's got the physicality. He's got the mechanics. He's got the good base, the good throwing base. He does well throwing over the top. He does well going downfield with his follow through. And that gives you time to work on things like his touch, which we talked about he needs. If you're going to go after other needs at 22, Ritter's not going to be available in the third round or even the end of the second round. He'll be gone by then, in which case then you're looking at someone like Carson Strong out of Nevada. who you can get later in the third round.
Now, what do you have working at, or what do you have in the works at Last Word on college football? What's coming up for you all?
Well, you know, it's funny. The transfer portal has become a 24/7 story for us, as it has for all college sites. I don't think anybody envisioned it would be this off the chains the way it is. So we're doing a lot. We're doing a lot of work with, you know, for those who haven't been to the site, we've got 25 writers across the country covering different teams, and I couldn't be more proud of our team. We just blew through the all-time record for the site for page views this last season. So we're working on a lot of stuff on the transfer portal. We've got a lot of guys who are going to the various all-star games, like the Senior Bowl, and I will personally be at the NFLPA Bowl in Pasadena in a couple of days, tracking, you know, the work of some of the players who've left these schools and what their future is in the pros. And then you've got another signing day coming up in February, and then in March you're all the way back in spring camp already. And so there's never a dull moment with this anymore, especially, like I said, with the transfer portal and the way that there's been all these coaching changes throughout college football for the last 2 to 3 months. There's a lot of in-depth stuff that goes on. And then we're also doing a lot of coverage from Dallas with the college football playoff committee, and looking at what's going to happen with the playoff expansion, why it's stalled out, things like that. Things we actually predicted a year ago that it would stall out the way it did. And, how that impacts the different conferences and things like that. It's ironic because, you know, the Atlantic Coast Conference is taking a big part of the blame for stalling out the last bit of meetings. And yet the athletic director at North Carolina State, Boo Corrigan, was just named the chair of the playoff committee this afternoon. So there's a great deal of irony in that. And so we're doing a lot of in-depth coverage on those types of things also.
Now, being out there for the Collegiate Bowl and being on the West Coast, what is your – this is totally unrelated to football, but I would like to mix in a happy. What is your go-to Italian meal in the place? Like, what's your go-to dish, like, when you go out to eat?
All right. Well, I mean, if we're doing Italian, I mean, there are a few places. Carmine's in Pasadena is – South Pasadena is always really good. But I got to tell you that I'm one of those guys who like, first of all, I like a variety of foods. I mean, you name it, we're eating it. And I'm always looking for the good Mexican restaurants and the street tacos and things like that around here. There are a lot of great hole in the wall places throughout LA. It's never the chain place or the big place. It's the little hole in the wall that makes, you know, the best street tacos that you'll find, you know, with some amazing sauce on them, that kind of thing. So it's, that's what I'm usually looking for. I mean, where we are, I literally live 2.5, maybe 3 hours from the border. And so it's always a look for the good Mexican food here.
There you go. Tony Siracusa, managing editor, Last Word on college football. Also, Football Writers Association of America on the board of directors. Thank you so much for joining us. This is going to be Tony's weekly spot. Next week, we're going to discuss another position that fans can definitely sink their teeth into as far as the Las Vegas Raiders. Tony, thank you so much for joining us on the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Glad to do it.
This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.